Welcome to the K-Beauty Podcast, a love letter to all things K-Beauty, hosted by me, Sugar Peaches, from Sugar Peaches Loves, a German and English beauty blog dedicated to beauty products from around the world, with a special passion for Asian and indie brands. I'm happy that you and I are meeting again for this week's episode of the K-Beauty Podcast. This week's topic is slightly controversial, I guess, though it really shouldn't be. We will be talking about J-Beauty versus K-Beauty, so skincare from Japan being pitted against Korean beauty products in a completely superfluous battle cooked up by marketing people and beauty editors. So make yourself comfortable and let's start unpacking the current debate. Welcome back, everyone. So I actually wasn't sure if I should really do today's episode because some people are already rolling their eyes at what they consider to be clickbaity nonsense. But the truth is, this whole debate is not going to go away anytime soon since beauty editors are so keen to push the narrative of J-Beauty is trending in 2018. I also feel that there is a lot to say about why pitting the Korean beauty industry against the Japanese one and comparing K-Beauty to J-Beauty unfavorably leaves a very bad taste in many Asian beauty lovers' mouths. So let's dive right into the debate, shall we? To be absolutely honest, I'm not sure who started this whole avalanche of articles on blogs and online magazine sites, but ever since the latter half of 2017, more and more publications are coming out with headlines such as these. Despite the boom in K-beauty brands, Japan is still Asia's true beauty leader. Or how about this one? Japanese beauty brands reassert themselves amid K-beauty buzz, or mochi skin is Japan's answer to Korea's dewy skin obsession. And you don't have to go through 10 steps to get it. And here's my absolute favorite. Please, don't call J-beauty the new K-beauty. This is from a Fashionista article that will feature very heavily in today's episode of my podcast. I myself became aware of the whole 2018 is the year for J-beauty. Watch out, K-beauty narrative when I read an article on German Vogue online that made me roll my eyes extra hard. Now, you may ask, fairly enough, why this whole thing triggers me so much. Well, see, here's the problem with all of these articles. They have one thing in common, and it is that they all paint a pretty shallow and, frankly, insultingly simplistic picture of both Japanese and especially Korean beauty products, making unfair comparisons and using overgeneralizations to make their point. It would be fine if these articles would just try to convey the idea that J-beauty is having a comeback after K-beauty stormed Western skincare markets. I think that's fine. That's an interesting thesis to pose. I don't really see it yet. I can't really see that in the Asian beauty community, people are suddenly being more interested in J-beauty. But okay, I'm not a super beauty insider. This may be happening. But you can already see in the headlines where the whole conversation is going here. Japan is the, quote, true leader of Asian beauty. So much better, in fact, that it would almost be insulting to call J-beauty the new K-beauty, please. J-beauty is always been the true Asian beauty. And I mean, isn't K-beauty just a buzz anyway? Just a short-lived trend? When I was reading all of these J-beauty versus K-beauty articles, I noticed three main points that all of them seem to be making when they compared the two. And I will do my best to go through all of the three and basically dismantle what these articles are saying, or rather put it into a context as to why certain products or certain things developed in each country's beauty industry and maybe not in the other or not as quickly as in the other. So we can put into perspective especially what is being said about K-beauty and especially how unfair it is to assume certain things about K-beauty products or to make very broad sweeping statements about the beauty industry in both countries. So let's start with point number one, which is J-beauty as ancient and steeped in tradition versus K-beauty as a young, short-lasting, and buzzing trend. All the articles seem to be doing that, but the one where I noticed it the most is the one from the South China Morning Post, which is titled, Japanese Beauty Brands Reassert Themselves Amid K-Beauty Buzz. Basically, the whole article tries to establish Japanese beauty products as this ancient, yet modern, sophisticated, understated, yet technically advanced miracle that is said to beat out the buzzing and basically just very glitzy, without without much substance, K-beauty craze. You think I'm exaggerating in my summary of this article? Let's have some quotes here. All right, this one is a mouthful. J-beauty, essentially made-in-Japan brands that fuse an archetypal ethos, understated aesthetic, age-old beauty rights, and groundbreaking formulations, may be touted as the next big thing. But many of the brands have been around for years, in some cases decades, perfecting the poreless complexion Japanese women are renowned for. So J-beauty has an archetypal ethos, whatever that means. I kind of can guess what they mean, but okay, whatever. It's a little bit over the top. J-beauty is based on age-old beauty rituals, but it also contains groundbreaking formulations, and the brands have been around for decades. So there's all this emphasis put on tradition and a long-lasting tradition. Now, to be fair here, and I really want to make sure that no one gets the idea that I'm in any way bashing J-beauty, because I'm a fan of all skincare from all countries that is good, really, and they're fantastic products coming from Japan, absolutely no doubt about it. And to be fair, it is true that the world's oldest beauty brand actually does come from Japan. It is Shiseido. It was founded in 1872 as a Western-style pharmacy, and the history of the brand is super interesting. I found an article about it that I will definitely link in the podcast episodes. It's really fascinating how innovative Shiseido was, especially during the earliest 20th century. They have created a lot of things that we are still using today. Color correcting, for instance, is basically an invention of Shiseido. But as I will discuss a bit later in this episode, there is actually a historical reason why K-beauty is so much younger than J-beauty, why there wasn't much movement in the industry in Korea, especially in the beginning of the 20th century. And anyone who knows a little bit about Asian history probably can already guess certain reasons why Korea didn't really invent much in terms of fancy beauty products in the 1920s and 30s. And 40s and 50s. But for now, let's get back to the idea of the archetypal ethos of J-beauty perpetuated in this article. All right. This next statement from the article made me roll my eyes extra hard. The efficacy of these brands was long ago discovered by women in the West, who have been guarding this secret from a sizable proportion of the beauty buying market. Okay, I can't claim that women in the West know that many indie brands, or I guess Japanese drugstore products, maybe from Japan, but the brands mentioned specifically in the article, Shiseido, SK-II, Shu Uemura, these brands are no secret in the West. Shiseido is so ubiquitous throughout Germany especially. You can find it in any perfume store, really, in any high brand type store, right next to Chanel or Clinique. This is embarrassing white people stuff, but I didn't even realize it was Japanese or never thought about it until I was a little bit older. In my teens and early 20s, so in the 90s and early 2000s, I always just thought of them as, okay, this is really embarrassing, but I thought they were French, to be honest, because all the major perfume or high-end skincare and makeup brands usually came from France, to be honest. I feel Shiseido was much more popular back then, especially when I was a teenager. I remember how excited I was when I got the Shiseido relaxing fragrance as an eau de toilette for Christmas. I still remember the scent. It was divine and it felt really special. But today, I don't really see that many influencers talk about Shiseido anymore, especially here in Germany. I wouldn't say that it's a very trending brand overall. When it comes to Shu Uemura, that unfortunately also isn't sold here, but pretty much everyone has heard of the Shu Uemura eyelash curler and the cleansing oil. SK-II is also not sold here, at least in Germany. I am not sure about the UK or maybe the rest of Europe, but I've known them since I lived in New Zealand because Australian actress Cate Blanchett is their Western brand ambassador, and so it was quite popular in Australia. It's quite fascinating in general how all of these articles contradict themselves when it comes to either painting J-beauty as this long-kept secret versus how it's always been so much more popular in the West than K-beauty. I'm not sure what's going on there. Vogue UK, for instance, writes that Japanese brands brands have long had a place in the beauty cupboards of Westerners. Think skincare giants such as Shiseido, SK-II, and Shu Uemura. Okay, but I don't even mind this as much, despite, of course, the whiff of Orientalism here. The idea of the secret Orient in their secret world of beauty. But my main gripe with this whole view of J-beauty as ancient and traditional, regardless even of whether or not this is true, and I mean, it is kind of true, but what annoys me is that this is pitted against K-beauty as this immature new kid on the block. To quote the Fashionista article, my favorite, if you remember, Japanese beauty, especially skincare, has always been focused on time-honored methods and traditions. In Japanese culture, the ritual of beauty is centuries old, says Surat. When we think about the art forms of kabuki and the geisha, there's a long history of adornment and the ritual in both skincare and makeup application. Okay, maybe the whiff of Orientalism is bothering me a lot, actually. Just once, I would love to read an article about Japanese beauty products from a Western beauty editor without them mentioning geisha. But okay, I don't think that will ever happen. The thing is, Korea also has a history of using certain ancient ingredients for beautification. Most cultures do. You will be hard-pressed to find any culture where there isn't some form of ritualistic use of skin painting that predates what we today consider makeup or some form of cream, oil that is used to protect your skin and your hair. It does, of course, vary in the form of sophistication, I guess, but we should be careful with rating that, especially again, Western writers rating various Asian cultures by which one is more sophisticated. It just makes my skin crawl. I don't want to downplay Japan's achievements or unique cultural approach, especially to makeup, but I do take issue with the weird way Japan's beauty culture is described as this mystical, ritualistic, ancient tradition, and Korean beauty culture is completely new and in its infant shoes. I read a great article on the history of Korean beauty, and it mentioned that Koreans, of course, have also been using makeup and skincare for centuries, if not millennia, just like the Japanese. To quote from the article, which focuses on the Koreana Cosmetics Museum in Seoul, Korean makeup history began in the Three Kingdoms, which was around 57 before Christ, and peaked during the Goryeo Kingdom. I've probably mispronounced that, I'm sorry. This is around Middle Ages time, so around 900 to 1300, when people were interested in self-grooming and beautification. Many ingredients still used today in Korean skincare have a long and varied history. Again, I'm going to quote from the article. It's a bit of a longer quote, sorry, but I just found it really interesting. In ancient times, Koreans produced facial scrubs, beauty lotions, facial creams and oils, along with colored powders, rouge and eyebrow ink. Jodu, or ground mung beans, were used as a cleansing soap after blending the powder with water as they contain saponin, an effective cleansing agent. Lotions were made from juice, extracted from plants such as gourd stems to be applied after washing. Oils or plant seed extracts were used as a solvent, and castor and camellia hair oil were widely used as they are less sticky with the tender fragrance. Apricot and peach oils were believed to relieve liver spots and freckles. Safflower oil, rich in vitamin E and essential fatty acids, was good for increasing skin moisture and gloss. And Koreans also used ground rice and millet, called mibun or baekbin, to use as powders. The first mass-marketed product from Korea was a rice powder called bakgabun. Again, sorry for the mispronunciations. In 1910, it had pretty heavy amounts of lead in it though, so it was taken off the market in the 1930s. So plenty of history there as well for Korea when it comes to beauty products and its use of skincare. Well, you wouldn't think that, however, when reading these comparison articles. Let's use another quote from the mess that is the Fashionista article. Unlike Korea, where products can be churned out the minute a trend starts to take off, J-beauty is much more interested in careful refinement and longevity. Beauty is not thought of as expendable in Japan. Everything is carefully contemplated to create products that are timeless, efficacious, and luxurious. So Korea just churns out products without the careful refinement and longevity that we find with J-beauty. The South China Morning morning post makes it even clearer that Japanese beauty offers the more cultured approach compared to K-beauty. I quote, Giselle Goh, a former magazine editor who recently launched her own beauty line, Dum Dum, says it's cultural. Japanese beauty has been under the radar because its focus has always been about perfecting centuries-old rituals and formulations. That ethos is low-key and I guess not as exciting compared to other razzle-dazzle beauty innovations that come with a lot of bells and whistles. And I love how the article qualifies this and clarifies this, just in case we didn't get it. And it says, Goh is referring to the bells and whistles of K-beauty. Gee, thanks, South China Morning Post. We wouldn't have figured that out without you. And then the article goes on to say, many are predicting J-beauty will be its successor, but Japanese beauty predates the Korean version. Now, I just showed how this idea that Japanese beauty predates the Korean version is kind of debatable, since both countries do have a long history of using certain beauty ingredients, even thousands of years ago. And there has always been a strong cultural exchange between these two countries. So a lot of the ingredients are actually quite similar. Camellia oil, for instance, is used by both of them and has been used for centuries. And of course, China also has influenced both of these countries. What the articles usually mean, of course, is that most Korean skincare brands are relatively young, with K-beauty only really taking off in the 1960s and having its new heights in the late 1990s and early 2000s, ongoing and still going strong now. And what happened in the 1960s was that South Korea, passed a law that banned the sales of foreign products. And so more and more skincare companies had a chance to sell their Korean products to Koreans. And this is when this huge diversification happened. At first glance, it does seem, however, like the Korean beauty industry was pretty much non-existent, especially during the late 19th and early to mid-20th century, as I said earlier. But, well, there's a very, very simple reason for that. And it's very telling that all these articles just conveniently leave that reason out when praising the amazingness of J-beauty. I know this is uncomfortable to talk about, but we need to address it. Japan annexed and colonized Korea from 1910 to 1945. And especially during World War II, with the rise of Japanese nationalism, anything Korean was considered undesirable, and Japanese culture, language, and yes, also Japanese products were promoted as the true glory of Asia in Korea. And there is no doubt that Korea suffered terribly during World War II. And also, as we all know, it ended up a separated country after World War II, split in half by the US and Russia into what is today known as South Korea and North Korea. And unlike my country, Germany, they haven't been able to reunite for a variety of reasons. Many Koreans were exploited for cheap labor by the Japanese in World War II. And of course, there's also the still not fully resolved issue of the comfort women. Those were non-Japanese women, and among them was a staggeringly high number of Korean women, young women, sometimes as young as 12. That were used as sex slaves by the Japanese Imperial Army. This is still an incredibly difficult subject, both to Koreans and Japanese. And it is still something that, at least on a political level, hasn't fully been dissolved yet. Japan has officially apologized, but to many Koreans, this came far too late. And I think there was also a problem with the phrasing of the apology. In any case, this is still an ongoing thing that is so emotional to so many Koreans. Not only did South Korea have to come back from the ashes of World War II, it also had to endure yet another war, the Korean War from 1950 to 1953. This is something that didn't happen in my country, Germany, and Germany had a massive economic boom in the 1950s that Korea couldn't have because it was still a war-torn country from a new war. Much, much more difficult. So really, is it any wonder that there weren't any groundbreaking beauty products being created until much, much later? Also, and this is what just really angers me about the whole J-beauty is so much more sophisticated than K-beauty debate. Many Koreans still battle with this view of their culture and their country as less refined than Japanese culture. This has its roots in colonial times, where even Korean names were changed to Japanese ones. Now listen, I have a strong and deep love for Japan and Japanese culture. I learned Japanese during my university times. I would love to go back to learning more, because it's kind of still on a very basic level. It's very difficult. 超難しいです. I think Japanese culture is something to be admired, absolutely, but so is Korean culture. Korean culture is just as interesting, unique, and admirable, especially given how badly beaten down Korea was after World War II and before World War II as well. It was a poor country for a very long time. It also is a much smaller country than Japan, so it seems a very unfair comparison. And it's an unnecessary comparison, especially if Western writers make it. Pitting one Asian country against the other just feels severely uncomfortable to me. And this brings me to the next point I wanted to discuss, which is the idea of J-beauty as the true origin for what makes Asian beauty unique or original, and K-beauty as a weaker copycat. So the articles on J-beauty versus K-beauty constantly stress Japan's innovation and how most of the K-beauty staples were actually Japanese inventions, so Korea just copied them, basically. Again, let's go back to the South China Morning Post article. I quote, "That innovation, ironically still steeped in age-old rituals, has already begun changing the faces of women across continents. Japan, after all, is the country that took double cleansing mainstream, created essences as a skincare category, and taught the world that cleansing oils were not an oxymoron." And from another article, this one on Quartzy, I quote, "Contrary to popular belief, Korean beauty brands didn't invent the sheet mask. They only popularized it and made it more accessible." And a couple of articles place great emphasis on the fact that Japan invented essences. I think it is the SK-II essence that was the first one to come out, but I'm not even 100% sure. Unfortunately, I couldn't find any firm sources that said, okay, this was really the first essence. But okay, if they all say it, I'm gonna believe it. But the thing is, even if Japan invented double cleansing and sheet masks and essences, all the whole lot of it, Korea made these things go viral. They made these products go global. How condescending to say that Koreans only popularized sheet masks. Sheet masks are a global phenomenon. That's not just a small feat. That's incredible. I mean, BB cream was invented by Germans. But would I sit down and write an article claiming that G-beauty is superior to K-beauty because we Germans are super innovative and Korea just stole our amazing idea of creating BB creams? I realize I'm being a little bit polemical here. Sorry for that. But doesn't it just seem to be the underlying idea in these articles that Korea is the less innovative copycat to J-beauty's innovation and uniqueness? Korean skincare brands managed to mass market sheet masks in a way that is nothing short of amazing. It deserves our respect. And the same is true for BB creams. Take my word for it, no one in Germany cared about BB creams before they basically came back into the country via the Korean brands. Or rather, Western brands then copying the Korean brands. Also, again, conveniently left out by these articles is the fact that Korea has invented something utterly unique that has revolutionized the makeup world. And that is, of course, the Cushion Foundation. It was an innovation by Amore Pacific that is now being licensed out to Western brands such as Maybelline, Chanel, Lancôme, and Dior. These cushion foundations, or BB cushions, are a patented original idea of a Korean beauty brand. So again, there is plenty of uniqueness and innovation coming both from Korea and Japan. There's absolutely no need for putting down either one. They both offer their own spin on a variety of product types that we can all benefit from. Some people do better with Japanese essences, some people do better with Japanese cleansing oils, but some people prefer, for instance, Korean sheet masks or even Taiwanese sheet masks. Okay, let's get to my last point that really annoyed me. They all annoyed me, but maybe this one just a little bit more, because if you just know a tiny bit about K-beauty, you instantly can debunk this. And that is the idea of J-beauty as sophisticated, understated, and minimalist versus K-beauty as cute, glitzy, razzmatazz, pretty, but pretty much without any substance behind the pretty facade. Again, we can find plenty of examples for this viewpoint in the articles that I've read. Let's start with Troy Sur. Surat, the founder of Surat Cosmetics. This is a Western brand, from what I understand. He's quoted in the Fashionista article as stating, "While so many of the Korean products were whimsical and appealing in their cheekiness and playfulness, I think that globally we are taking on a more serious tone. People are looking for substance and integrity." And Vicky Tsai, she's the founder of the, again, not Japanese, but American beauty brand Tatcha, which has its whole own problem of orientalist marketing. She says in that article that the formulas of J-beauty products are very spare, and when you work with so few pieces, the quality and precision is paramount. It's like sushi. Only a few ingredients can be really beautiful if done right. Okay, first of all, barf. Just so vomit-inducing, both of these quotes. Just the orientalist flavor of the Fashionista article is just god-awful. By the way, if you don't quite know what I mean with orientalist or orientalism, I suggest you listen to episode 1 of this podcast, where I have a whole way too long discussion about this whole subject. Basically, to just sum it up shortly, it's this idea of any Asian country, in this case Japan, as this exotic land, basically frozen in time. But let's again mostly focus on the way J-beauty is compared to K-beauty and painted as more sophisticated and more minimalist, and by that somehow apparently more refined. Here is another quote from the Fashionista article. I told you it's my darling. K-beauty is all about the razzmatazz, Instagrammable products and routines, extremes like 10-step regimes, glass skin, all with cute and clever packaging backed up by serious formulations. In contrast, the Japanese approach to beauty is more about tradition, a quiet seriousness, understated luxury, and played-down presentation reinforced by a long heritage in beauty. Well, at least the lady quoted here, Anna Marie Solovich, who, again, is not Japanese. This is a bit of a theme here. Non-Japanese people and non-Korean people talking about Japanese and Korean skincare. At least she acknowledges the serious formulations. That's something. I'm happy about that. Not so happy about all the other stuff she's saying. I don't even know where to begin unpacking the rest of the quote. K-beauty is described as razzmatazz, is described as favoring extremes that are almost ridiculous, and it's dismissed as being cute. And then here's J-beauty, steeped in tradition, it has a quiet seriousness, it is all about understated luxury, it has a play-down presentation, and again, the long heritage. We've had that before. Of course. The South China Morning Post article goes even further with this whole Korea beauty is cute and immature, Japanese beauty is grown up and sophisticated comparison. Here is a quote. "With K-beauty, you can get good quality, great fun packaging and reasonable prices, which opens up a beauty trend to a younger market. And it's incredibly Instagrammable. My theory, however, is that we will see a return to the expert, the makeup artist, the journalist, the stylist. They are all being asked, once again, for their expert opinion, and their tastes and use of product is based on performance and not gimmick. These influential experts want brilliantly made products that deliver, and Japanese formulations deliver on every level." This is a quote from Millie Kendall, who is the co-founder of Beauty Mart, and the other lady that I mentioned before, Anna Marie Solovich, is also a Beauty Mart co-founder. They turn up a lot in these articles, actually, and it may surprise you, but Beauty Mart sells predominantly Japanese beauty brands. This is shocking, I know. What a surprise. So this is all quite a lot, I think, to digest. But I hope the quotes can show you how K-beauty is painted as young and trendy, whereas J-beauty has so much more maturity, and the true experts in the field of beauty, of course, go for J-beauty because it just offers more quality, you know? It's not as glitzy and dismissibly cute. Here's an interesting fact that I'm sure will blow your mind. Hashtag sarcasm alert. Korean beauty products aren't just Tony Moly octopus cream pots and Princess Pink etude house lipsticks. I know, shocking. Why is it that all these articles just completely ignore such high quality Korean brands with super sleek and minimalist packaging such as Kicho, Wish Formula, Solwasu, The History of Woo, Laneige, Ligiham, Blythe, Adston, Swanee Coco, so many more that I could just name here. Also, again, this will just completely make you lose your mind with surprise, I'm sure, but not all Japanese beauty products are sophisticated, luxurious, and understated in their packaging. I mean, Japan invented kawaii culture. The Japanese are the queens and kings of the cutesy and overly ornate. This is why so many people love Japanese pop culture. I will make sure to link a few examples from the J-beauty world, but just off the top of my head, I'm thinking of the Can Make blushes or any Can Make makeup product pretty much. And then there's the Korea Beauty Skincare. It has these, the Rose of Versailles, this is Shoujo manga, and it has, you know, Rose of Versailles sheet masks with all the drawings from the manga. And then you have the super popular drugstore brand Heron Make. It has makeup products with a sort of Shoujo manga style as their branding on the packaging. And then there are the super girly, super pink, super ornate Sailor Moon makeup products. I see them on Instagram a lot. Oh, so Instagrammable, and yet, surprise, they're J-beauty. Japan also has so many affordable drugstore-style brands, such as from Bioré. Bioré is one of the many brands that belong to the Kao Corporation. Bioré sunscreens are super popular precisely because they are so affordable and not luxurious. They're just straightforward. And the Hadalabo products, of course, everyone knows the hyaluronic acid lotions or their foaming cleansers. They're also cheap. They're drugstore-style products that don't really offer much in terms of whose sophistication and beauty rituals. They are simple in the way that a CeraVe lotion or cleanser is, which is why so many people love them, really. To compare higher-end Japanese brands with lower-end Korean brands is just an unfair comparison. To compare SK-II with Etude House is absurd. Etude House is branded specifically for a younger audience. Cheap and cheerful, basically. Still good stuff. Stuff, but clearly for someone who can't just spend $100 on a small bottle of essence. And SK-II is incredibly expensive. So of course the packaging will look much more luxurious. This would be like me taking, say, CoverGirl, which we don't have here in Germany, and compare it with, say, Chanel beauty products. And then I would go ahead and claim that European beauty is just so much more sophisticated than American beauty. Clearly, e-beauty wins. All the experts say so. Also, Korean beauty products are often painted as having flashy and weird ingredients. Again, I talked about this in episode 1 of this podcast. And J-beauty is supposed to be all about simple, ancient and pure ingredients, such as, for instance, rice extract. Now, this isn't wrong per se, but again, it's simply not the full picture. Like any country, Japan has plenty of their own quote-unquote weird ingredients. My favorite, of course, is using dried and powdered nightingale droppings as a brightening mask. Yep, you heard that right. Japanese bird poop facials are a thing. Is bird poop as a beauty ingredient less weird than snail slime? You can decide that for yourself, really. To me, neither is particularly weird because as long as it's hygienic, I don't mind putting it on my face. The bottom line is really this. Every country has beautiful beauty products to offer, and there's no need to put down one country's beauty industry to promote another. Most Asian beauty lovers usually use a mix of products from J-beauty to K-beauty to T-beauty to Taiwanese beauty. And speaking of Taiwanese beauty, isn't it interesting that no one speaks of T-beauty when most insiders in the Asian beauty community think that this is the next big thing to go viral with their innovative sheet masks and super interesting dermal brands? Now, one reason why especially Chinese publications might be putting down K-beauty is that last year there were quite a lot of political problems between China and South Korea, and for a while, China actually banned the import of Korean beauty products. It was a huge thing for Korea because South Korea lost a lot of revenue revenue. The beauty industry really had to struggle to overcome this because China is a massive market for them. Another guess that I have is that this whole recent wave of publications may just be a conscious effort by the Japanese beauty industry to get a slice of the pie that is the current Asian beauty trend in the West, which, fair enough, but I'm pretty sure that if you make Japanese beauty products more readily accessible in the West, they will find lots and lots of fans, and there is no need to put K-beauty down to market J-beauty as the more sophisticated Asian beauty industry. There are good and bad products from all countries. Germany has amazing skincare and also a lot of rubbish that is being on offer. I live very close to the French border, and there are things that I buy in France that I can't get here in Germany. But when, for instance, I lived in New Zealand, I also always got certain things from the German drugstore that, again, I couldn't get in New Zealand. So each country really offers a certain type of product that works for certain skin types in just a beautiful way. And isn't that the great thing about the internet, that we can now mix and match? And it's just so dangerous to use this type of language, this type of orientalist language when promoting any type of Asian skincare. Let's not do this. Let's not put two countries in competition that already have a fragile history and somewhat shaky relations politically. There is enough space on our skincare shelves for beautiful products from Korea and Japan. And since I feel a bit sad that I had to be a bit salty about the Japanese beauty industry, which I don't really like to do, here are a few J-beauty products that I feel are truly cult-worthy and that I wholeheartedly recommend. And I can do it without talking about how pure they are and all the tradition that goes into making the products and the ritual behind them. I'm just going to tell you why they're good. So the first one I've already mentioned, and many of you might already know this type of product, and I'm talking about the Hada Labo Gokujun Hyaluronic Lotion. Most Asian beauty fans already know this classic. It has so many fans worldwide. Japanese lotions in general are something quite unique. They are a little bit lighter than Korean toners. They're quite watery, yet at the same time, they're much richer and more hydrating than our Western toners. They often have a milky color and are used primarily for hydration and brightening. The Hada Labo lotions come in a slightly confusing variety. I don't always quite understand which one does which, to be absolutely honest. The moist and the premium version, however, seem to be the most popular ones. The lotions contain hyaluronic acid, three different types in the moist version and even five types in the much richer premium version, which is geared towards more mature skin types. They are free from any fragrance, from mineral oil, from alcohol, and from any colorants. So most sensitive skin types tolerate them very well. Unless you have a problem with hyaluronic acid, you have to be a bit careful with that. Because they are so watery in their texture, these can be layered beautifully. Some people also fill them in spray bottles and then use them as a sort of milky mist toner throughout the day. This does not always work on makeup though, so be aware of that. These work fantastically well either as a toner step or as an extra step in between toner and essence serum. Many people even slather the whole body with them, and some even use it on their scalp. Apparently it helps very, very well against any scalp issues. Apart from the Hada Labo ones, the Kiku Masamune Sake Skin Lotion High Moisture is also super popular. Kiku Masamune is a fascinating brand since they are actually a sake brewery. They have developed their own skincare products containing the sake extract, and sake extract is known to help brighten the skin, apparently. The lotion is said to be ultra moisturizing and brightening, though you must be able to live with a strong sake smell. So apparently you smell a little bit like you just came back from binge drinking when you use it. Maybe not ideal, but a lot of people say it wears off quite quickly. Another skin lotion many people rave about, I haven't tried it yet, is the Naturie Hatomugi Skin Conditioner. This does contain alcohol, the other two products don't, or three products rather. Some of you may not like this as much, but a lot of people do say they don't mind the alcohol content too much, and it's still very, very hydrating. It does boast a super interesting skincare ingredient, which is is Job's Tears Extract. It's called Hatomugi in Japanese, and that's where the name comes from for the product. Now, Job's Tears Extract is said to help with dryness, with eczema, and even people with acne say it helps fade the acne scars. And the product is super cheap. All of these skincare lotions are extremely affordable. Okay, one last lotion type product, and that is the Cezanne Ceramide Skin Conditioner High Moist. This one also contains hyaluronic acid, pretty much all of the lotions do, and it contains ceramides. Ceramides are good for dry skin, and they also are often used for anti-aging because they plump up the skin. This one, the Cezanne lotion, may be a little bit too rich for some skin types. Many people say it is more hydrating, more gentle than the Hada Labo lotions, though it does contain essential oils. So with this one, make sure that you can tolerate the ingredients well. These products are just so affordable, all of these lotion type products. They contain usually around 500 mils of product, and often they cost less than $15. They last forever. The Hada Labo lotions also usually have a refill option, which I find super great for the environment. I'm really quite happy that Japanese beauty companies often are a little bit more environmentally friendly, it seems. Yes, compared to K-beauty. Now I've done the comparison myself. Oh no! But they really do offer more refillable packaging options. They also have really cool things such as multiple sheet masks in one package, where you basically take one mask out like you would a tissue from a tissue box. That's pretty neat, and it definitely saves up on packaging. And speaking about sheet masks, the Lululun sheet masks are another fan fave, mostly because, again, they are very affordable and they offer very reliable hydration. Now, they may not be the most refined sheet masks out there, but I do love them for their simplicity and their straightforwardness. They just deliver straightforward hydration. The Rosette Aqua Ceramide Gel is another affordable skincare product that many swear by. I haven't tried it myself. It's not the most refined product in the world, apparently. It's just a straight up hydrating gel. But at that price, it doesn't really have to be anything more than that. It's said to be ultra moisturizing without feeling heavy. Just a lovely light moisturizer that a lot of people swear by. I can also wholeheartedly recommend the Kao Megurism Steam Warm Eye Masks. They come in a variety of scents such as rose, chamomile, and lavender. These are self-warming eye masks. You might know these heat patches that you sometimes use as hand warmers during winter. It's the same principle, but as an eye mask. And they are so soothing and relaxing, especially during hay fever season. They are a godsend for sensitive red and puffy eyes. I love them for relaxation in the evening. Oh, they're so great. Another thing that I feel Japan does better than any other country is oil blotting papers. I'm almost certain they must have invented them because those from Japan are always the best ones, in my opinion. Japan offers all sorts of different versions of these papers, infused with green tea, for instance, or even gold specks. The packaging is always extra pretty and playful. One might even say it's cute. They're great for little gifts as well, and they are super affordable. Japanese mascaras and fake lashes are also known to be some of the best in the world, and again, super affordable for what they can do. Hollywood makeup artist and makeup legend Lisa Eldridge always stocks up when she is in Japan. She always buys a whole haul of Japanese fake lashes. Japan invented both tubing mascaras as well as fiber mascaras, which have gone global in recent years. Sadly, I personally can't tolerate either of those. They sound great, but they just don't work on my very sensitive eyes. Sad. So I haven't tried any Japanese mascaras myself, but I do know that both the Kiss Me Herein Make Volume and Curl Mascara and the Shiseido Majolica Majorca Lash King Mascara are supposed to be amazing. And they are also, again, super affordable. I could go on for much longer listing great J-beauty products, but let's leave it at that for now. This podcast episode has already been going on for way too long. I'm very sorry about that. It's a big topic. Whether it is J-beauty, K-beauty, T-beauty, or whatever else letter beauty, the important thing is to find joy in your skincare and work out what fits your skincare needs. There's no need to create an artificial battle between countries. Good beauty products will always find their way to the global beauty community in my eyes. Brands just need to find a way to make them accessible globally. I'm looking at you there, amazing German drugstore brands I can't recommend to my non-German audience, because because they aren't available globally, and I always had to come back to Germany from New Zealand to even get my hands at them. Very annoying. But anyway, that's all for now on J-Beauty versus K-Beauty, and now to something completely different. Here are the weekly Fave Craves and Misbehaves. Ah yes, we're at that point again where I talk about my weekly faves, craves and misbehaves. Let's get right to it with the crave of the week, which is the Skin Food Royal Honey Propolis Essence Glow Packed with SPF 50+, PA++++. I saw this cushion compact on the Skin Food Instagram account and I instantly got hard eyes. It's hard to describe this to you. You kind of have to see it to understand why it's making my heart flutter with desire. First of all, the packaging is so sleek and pretty, which, if I am seeing this correctly, it's a beige rose gold finish to the compact surface. Just super extra pretty. And then when you open it, the cushion has this stunning, super pleasant to look at honey-colored marble pattern. Apparently, it has been enriched with the famous Skin Food Royal Honey Propolis Essence. This is a massive holy grail for a lot of people, especially those with drier skin types. The whole cushion surface really looks like someone took a spoon and drizzled honey all over it. It looks so appealing to me. Now, there aren't any reviews out yet, so this might totally just be a dud and not great for my oily skin. It might be too dewy, but I still really want this. Maybe I just stare at it and stroke it and whisper my precious in case the finish doesn't work well on me. I just keep it forever and look at it longingly and with a really almost crazy smile on my lips, because it's freaky to love a beauty product, but it's so pretty. Yes Style sells this cushion packed, and I will make sure to link it in the episode notes. Sadly, it only comes in two shades, so it won't work on everyone, which I realize is quite the understatement. Now let's get to the fave of the week, which is the Claire Supple Preparation Unscented Toner. Okay, this fave of the week is a tad debatable, because it hasn't actually been a full week since I tried the product. I only received it a couple of days ago. But this was already my crave of the week last week, and I kind of sort of had a feeling even back then that I would adore this new product launch. And well, I can already tell that this is winning my heart. I'm basically already head over heels in love with this product. So this is the scent-free, essential oil-free version of the Claire Supple Preparation Facial Toner, which I also love. This is quite thick and gloopy, like most Korean toners, and it's very hydrating. I am using this both morning and night, and I'm amazed at how much my skin is loving this. I know they basically have the same ingredients, they just left out all the essential oils, but I would say that I'm even a tad more in love with this than with the original Claire's toner. I love both of them, but again, I know technically they're the same formulation, but somehow the unscented version seems to just sink into my skin much, much better. This has all of the great ingredients of the original toner in it, such as hyaluronic acid, beta-glucan, centella asiatica extract, licorice root extract, althea rose water, and yes, it is indeed completely scent-free. Well, okay, it does smell slightly like a research laboratory. It does have a weird chemical smell. My dad is a scientist, and he used to take us kids with him to his lab sometimes to babysit while he would work. This smell triggered some memories of the weird smell in the laboratory. But it's faint. It doesn't bother me too much. It does basically just evaporate after a while. I just really love that it doesn't leave such a strong, tacky, sticky feeling behind, like some Korean toners tend to be, especially if they're full of hyaluronic acid. They tend to be a little bit sticky. I think this will be a wonderful toner for spring and summer, and I can't wait to write a full blog review about this. I'll use it a bit longer though, obviously, to make an informed judgment call about the product. I've put a video of the toner and its texture on my Instagram account, so check that out to see it in action. So far, I can highly recommend this. Of course, it's only been a few days, so I understand if you remain skeptical for now. I accept that, guys. And just to clarify this at this point, no, I don't get paid by Wish Trend to say this. And also, no, I don't say this because they send me quote-unquote free stuff. Wish Trend has never pressured me to write reviews that are in any way slanted, and I wouldn't do it anyway. My opinion is not for sale. Certainly not for a $20 toner. Let's get to the misbehave of the week, and I am cheating a little bit here since this isn't actually an Asian beauty product, but I am justifying this choice with the fact that the brand is kinda sorta Asian beauty community adjacent, as in many Asian beauty lovers also love this particular brand, which is The Ordinary. So the misbehave of the week is The Ordinary Caffeine Solution 5% plus EGCG. So, okay, I won't even go into the whole crazy stuff going on at Deciem at the moment. That's the company that The Ordinary is a part of. I may just link an article in my episode notes explaining all of this better than I ever could. And since I've already talked at length about one controversy, I'm not going to go into another one today. Let it just suffice to say that there are some good reasons to consider maybe not supporting that company anymore, though I do respect people's consumer choices. Given that I myself am far from perfect in regards to always buying super ethically on all counts, definitely mea culpa on that one. Now, the reason why The Ordinary Caffeine Solution is this week's misbehave is that it, well, doesn't do anything. I have been using this for many weeks now because I just so desperately wanted it to work. I wanted it to make my under eye circles just disappear or at least seem less noticeable. But nope, not only does it not help with my dark circles, it also has this oily texture that tends to aggravate my eyes and make them sting. I have to be super careful to not let this get too close to my eyes, which, well, it's kind of difficult to do since this is a product specifically designed for the eye area. I don't even find this particularly moisturizing or exciting in any other way. It just sits on the skin, and that seems to be it. It doesn't even hydrate the area very well, in my opinion. So to me, this is a true flop. Not just a meh product, but just I would not recommend this. I would not repurchase this ever. I would probably just throw it out, to be honest. And I know that a lot of bloggers that I respect greatly love this. See, it's just another one of those moments where my skin type just doesn't really relate to this. I don't know. It did not work for me. And I tried. If you're German and you want a really affordable eye product, then go to Rossmann Drugstore and buy the Isana Eye Serum instead. I am super sad that this isn't international available, because I feel that North Americans and other Europeans would absolutely go mad over this amazing product. I swear, I'm probably on my 10th bottle by now. I just keep repurchasing this because it's so good. Now, other eye creams that I love, especially if you have puffy eyes or dark circles, are, for instance, the Clinique All About Eyes cream. It's fantastic. It's still one of my all-time faves. I used to use this quite a lot when I was in my 20s. I would still recommend this in a heartbeat, and I wish I could actually afford it again, to be honest. At the moment, not really in my budget. I also really enjoyed a sample I had recently of the La Neige Eye Sleeping Mask. It is more of a serum, I would say, than a mask, and one that seems to really help depuff my eyes dramatically. I noticed a very strong effect, depuffing effect, after I've used it overnight, though it does not seem to help as much with the under eye circle problem. When it comes to that, I would say the Clinique one is better. I'm also still loving the Benton Fermentation Eye Cream that I'm using at the moment. I snatched that up during a sale at YesStyle, so it was only 10 euros, and it contains 30 mils, so this will last me a while. I admit that this is quite a simple eye cream without any bells and whistles, but also it's very gentle and moisturizing without being too heavy. Benton, by the way, another Korean brand that is very simplistic and minimalist, but okay, anyway. That discussion is over now. Just got reminded of that because I used bells and whistles, which I quoted earlier from the article. So there are plenty of great alternatives to that caffeine solution. Maybe they're not as cheap, but at least they actually do stuff for my skin. Oh my god, guys, we've made it to the end of today's episode. I hope you're still with me. This was very long. I apologize, but we are at the end. Today was a bit of a controversial topic, I guess, but I just couldn't stay quiet when it comes to this problematic rhetoric behind the whole J-beauty versus K-beauty discussion. I just wanted to put my own opinion out there. If you would like to check out what I do besides this podcast, you can find my beauty blog, including the episode notes for this podcast. All the links to all these beautiful articles that I quoted from today for you to read and get mad over. Maybe leave a nice comment. You can find all of that at sugarpeachesloves.net. My blog used to primarily be in German, but you can now find a growing number of English key beauty reviews. And I look forward to reaching a more global audience with this and of course with the podcast. You can also find me on Twitter, though I am not super active there, to be honest. Sometimes I think I'm a little bit too old for Twitter, maybe. I don't know. Twitter and me, we have a difficult relationship. But you can find me there at Sugar Peach Liebe. And the podcast's Twitter account is K-Beauty Podcast. And of course, I'm also on Instagram. My handle there is at Sugar Peaches Loves. And I usually post shorter K-Beauty and Asian beauty reviews and unboxings there. The K-Beauty Podcast can be found on iTunes, which is still the most convenient way for you to subscribe and follow. But you can also listen to this and any other K-Beauty Podcast episodes on my blog or on SoundCloud, where a small like or even a comment is always a welcome sight. If you enjoy this podcast, please share it with people who you think may also enjoy it. This helps me so much, you have no idea. Reviewing and rating this podcast on iTunes only takes a few moments, and it always makes my day to see a positive review. And also any 5-star review helps people find my podcast easier on iTunes, so it's invaluable to me as a podcast creator, and I thank you very much if you do rate or review this podcast. If you have any questions, queries, topic suggestions, or if you're interested in working with me, you can email me at sugarpeachesloves, that's one word, sugarpeachesloves@gmail.com. We will see each other again next week with a new episode of the Key Beauty Podcast. I'll be honest, right now, I'm kind of pulling a blank when it comes to planning a topic, but hey, I'm sure I'll think of something. Whether you love K-beauty, J-beauty, T-beauty, G-beauty, F-beauty, US beauty, I don't even know what other beauty, or just a beautiful, wonderful mix of all of these, I wish you all sorts of wonderful new skincare and makeup discoveries for the week. And I can't wait to share mine with you again. Until then, happy masking, layering, and petting. Bye, guys. And as always, thank you so much. Thank you.